Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The testimony of three career Foreign Service officers, Ambassadors William Taylor, Marie Yovanovitch, and Deputy Assistant Secretary of State George Kent during the House Intelligence Committee's impeachment inquiry, gave many Americans a chance to hear firsthand, and many for the first time ever, about the integrity and hard work of our Foreign Service professionals. Although often derided as professional bureaucrats or today as the deep state, all take an oath to give a president their very best advice, then whatever the president's decision, carry out their orders, often taking extraordinary risk in doing so. At a time when the State Department is seeing immense turnover and shrinkage, much at the behest of the current administration itself, a veteran foreign policy and national security correspondent has written a book about four of our most decorated and dedicated Foreign Service professionals. Titled The Ambassadors, America's Diplomats on the Front Lines, it tells the story of Ryan Crocker, a six-time ambassador who twice ran the U.S. Embassy in Afghanistan and served as ambassador to Iraq, Robert Ford, who was taken hostage by a Shia militia during his long service in Iraq, and later as ambassador to Syria, stood up to President Assad, who was slaughtering his own people. Ann Patterson proved her negotiation skills in the Colombian drug wars, and then later brokered a behind-the-scenes political deal in Islamabad, Pakistan, to help prevent the collapse of a government there. And then Christopher Stevens, the Foreign Service talent who stole into Libya during the Civil War to guide American leaders then and was ultimately killed in the 2012 terrorist attack in Benghazi. Paul Richter has written about foreign policy and national security for over three decades. He was a longtime Washington-based reporter for the Los Angeles Times, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Paul Richter, thanks very much for joining us.
Glad to be with you.
Your book chronicles four career State Department ambassadors at a time when, perhaps for the first time, many Americans are actually hearing directly from some of these career Foreign Service officers, albeit in the impeachment inquiry in a totally different setting than normal. Why did you decide to write about these four Foreign Service officers?
I began writing about the State Department and foreign policy for the LA Times right after the 9/11 attacks. And I began to notice that whenever there was some new crisis in the Middle East, and there were a lot of crises in the Middle East, the top people at the State Department would turn to this small group of veteran diplomats who they trusted, who'd been a lot of places, especially in the Arab world and in South Asia, and who really knew the terrain. And it struck me that if I could tell their story, it would be really interesting. And it would also help me understand all these tough spots that we've gotten into in the Middle East and what I should think about them.
And before we talk a little bit about those Foreign Service officers that you profile in The Ambassadors, I have to ask you about your assessment of there's some new reporting about the state of the State Department, what some have called a purge. Many other people just say a brain drain at the State Department, especially in the first 2 years of the Trump administration when Rex Tillerson was the Secretary of State. According to a new AFSA data, 50% of career ministers were either retired or forced out. 20% of its minister counselors, which would be the second level underneath the career ambassador levels, they're gone. What does that do to the State Department in your view?
Well, this trend has been going on for a while now, both under Rex Tillerson when he was secretary and now under Mike Pompeo. Some people are being forced out. Others are leaving willingly because what's happened is that President Trump doesn't have the same view of career diplomats that his predecessors did, and his secretaries of state have left a lot of positions unfilled, maybe one quarter of ambassadors overall, and they've given other top jobs to political appointees, that's non-career people, many of whom don't have a background in diplomacy at all, come from other areas of life. And the effect of it is to diminish kind of the amount of expertise. And it's possible that the foreign policy apparatus will be able to get along without crises, but there'll be a slow erosion of what we know about places. And if the administration gets into a spot where there's some true crisis overseas, like a new war or some other upheaval, we may be hurt by the lack of people who really understand what's going on and what the recent history is in these places.
One of the things that your book points out is the amount of time many of these career officers spend in a region getting to know all the players. Many times they get to know them well before they are top players within their country, so they have a long-term relationship with them. I can also see some downsides to that. You somewhat become too close to that person, but at the same time, what are the advantages of losing that long-term relationships in our foreign policy relationships?
Diplomacy is really a game about personal relationships, because U.S. officials have to ask these foreign leaders to do various things that are in the U.S. national interest, and you need to have a level of trust with them. If there's always just, just arguments or friction, it really hurts our ability to do the job. One of the ambassadors that I write about in my book, Ryan Crocker, went into Afghanistan right after the Taliban government was toppled in 2001, and he started building a relationship with Hamid Karzai, who at the time was his former school teacher and former PR guy who'd never run a country or had any really big political job. And Karzai and Crocker set about trying to set up a new government in Afghanistan to replace the Taliban, and they formed a good relationship. And then 9 years later, the relationship between U.S. officials and Afghan officials and Karzai was at a standstill. There was so much arguing and disagreements that no business was getting conducted because Karzai wouldn't work with any Americans. So President Obama picked Crocker to go back again and start dealing with Karzai, and that's what happened. Now, Crocker and Karzai had frictions too, but the basic relationship was a strong one. It was a relationship of trust, and that was really important to help us get what we wanted to get out of the Afghans.
You know, in looking at the current situation today, the tension between career State Department officials and the political officials within the Trump administration seems to be at a really low point. But when you look through history, there's always been tension between career State Department officials and presidents. And you see presidents going around the official State Department apparatuses to get their own men on the ground or own people on the ground to get a sense of what they felt like was a true picture of a situation. That's not unusual, is it?
For there to be frictions between the career and the political people, no, it's been that way from the beginning, because presidents have felt that sometimes with their own people, they'll have more of a chance to really achieve big things on the world stage. Presidents are sometimes skeptical of the Foreign Service, feeling that the Foreign Service gives them too many warnings about things and is unwilling to try big new projects. Now, at the same time, it has to be said that all presidents still rely heavily on the Foreign Service. You know, it's a nonpartisan body of experts, basically people paid to provide independent advice. And even though presidents have some frictions, there's still heavy reliance on this core of about 8,000 people, because presidents recognize that they're really necessary.
One of the things that comes out in your book is the fact that oftentimes the career Foreign Service officers and ambassadors, especially the career ambassadors, are, because of their standing and their role to uphold the wishes of the administration, they may be advocating a completely different policy course than the one the administration determines. So while that policy is being determined, they will forcefully articulate their viewpoint on what that policy should be. But once the decision is made, it's their responsibility, and I think many of them consider it their duty, to completely put the administration's policy into effect.
That's right. The way the rules work are that the Foreign Service people, when a policy is being debated inside the government, they're free to, offer their opinion. Once the president has decided what he wants to do, then the Foreign Service people are supposed to salute and help figure out how to implement that policy. Now, sometimes there are continuing tensions because the Foreign Service people aren't completely won over. And all the people that I write about had doubts about policy at various times. But for the most part, they carried out their orders loyally. That's the way it's supposed to work, and that's the way it usually works.
My guest today is Paul Richter. He's a veteran foreign policy and national security correspondent, formerly with the Los Angeles Times. His new book is titled The Ambassadors, America's Diplomats on the Front Lines. It's published by Simon & Schuster. In it, he chronicles four career Foreign Service ambassador rank foreign policy officers, Foreign Service officers, Ryan Crocker, Robert Ford, Ann Patterson, and Christopher Stevens in the course of the book. You chose the Near East Bureau. Obviously, that's during the time you were doing your research. This was the focus of the United States. Talk a little bit about the Near East Bureau, if you would.
Well, because there's been so much crisis in the Middle East for decades, the Near East Bureau has always attracted a lot of talent. It's really kind of where the action was. And secretaries of state and the other top people in the State Department have always been preoccupied with these crises in the region. And that's, you know, from the standpoint of diplomats, a lot of them want to be where the action is. So they gravitate to the Near Eastern Affairs Bureau. It's drawn a lot of talent over the years. But it's also people who are willing to put up with really difficult and dangerous jobs. And that's the four people that I write about all faced danger regularly. You know, more ambassadors have been killed and more diplomats than generals have over the years. So it's a these can be risky jobs.
Tell us about the four people you chronicle. Ryan Crocker's probably, and Christopher Stevens, obviously the best known names. Christopher Stevens was the ambassador who died in the raid in Benghazi. Ryan Crocker has been the point man in the Near East, in Afghanistan and Iraq throughout the post-9/11 period. But tell us a little bit about those two and Robert Ford and Ann Patterson.
Well, Ryan Crocker is a six-time ambassador. He's a guy who always raised his hand and offered his help if there was some new war or civil upheaval beginning in the Middle East. And so he was ambassador during the period I write about. He was ambassador to Afghanistan twice and to Iraq once. He helped, as I said, set up a new government in Afghanistan in 2002. And then when President Bush was desperate to try to calm the civil war in Iraq in 2007, he brought in Ryan Crocker to help him do that. President Obama brought him back in 2011 to try to lay the groundwork for an American troop drawdown in Afghanistan. Robert Ford served five tours in Iraq. He was probably spent more time there than any other Foreign Service officer during the war and occupation. And then he went on to Syria, which he thought was going to be a calm and maybe even boring post. And as soon as he got there, the civil war in Syria erupted, and he ended up having to leave Syria abruptly because it just got too dangerous for him and the other diplomats there. Ann Patterson has had a series of really tough jobs as ambassador. She was ambassador to Colombia at the peak of the drug war there. Then she became ambassador to Pakistan in 2007 after Ryan Crocker left. And then she was sent to Egypt as ambassador in 2011, right after Egypt's revolution. So it was just one tough job after another. Chris Stevens, who your listeners have mostly heard of, had been the number two in the Libya embassy. And when a civil war broke out in Libya in 2011, he was asked to sneak into the country to help Washington understand who the rebels were. And he stayed there during the NATO bombing campaign in the summer of 2011, even though NATO was bombing fairly nearby in the places he was in. The following year, he came back as ambassador to Libya, and then he, as your listeners know, he lost his life in a terrorist attack on the U.S. mission in Benghazi.
all four of these ambassadors, you tell very interesting stories about them. What are some of the qualities that they share between the four of them?
Well, all four of them are interested in these places and learning how these societies work. I mean, people who sign up for this kind of work are willing to, you know, change their posts overseas every couple of years. They're just interested in foreign societies and foreign languages. And they're also skilled at building these relationships with foreign leaders. As I said before, that's what it's all about. They have to build confidence, and they have to be willing to go back and knock on the doors of these foreign leaders day after day if Washington wants some kind of business transacted. And these relationships are all often really difficult because these local leaders, they want American help, but they also resist American pressure. So these are really tough jobs. It's like, as somebody said, it's like being at Thanksgiving dinner with your most difficult relatives, but dinner lasts forever.
And what's also interesting is how they have to negotiate through their own government, because at least in several of their cases, the whole line of authority is very blurry on who takes the lead. For example, in Iraq, for most of the part, the State Department was sidelined by the military, by the Department of Defense. Department of Defense had veto power on who would go into Iraq and who wouldn't. I would think that makes their jobs infinitely more difficult.
Well, there's been a big debate over the last 20 years or so about whether the whole foreign policy process has become too militarized, because when we've been had these overseas military involvements, you know, the military is obviously the big player. They've got all the bodies. They've got all the money. Under the law, the ambassador to a foreign country is officially the top official in that country, but the military has a lot more people and money, and the commander the military commander in a country is also the top official leading his troops. So there's kind of a built-in conflict, and there's been a back and forth on this. When we began our presence in Iraq in 2003, the Bush administration's leadership gave the lead role to the military, and the ambassadors were sidelined. In fact, the State Department wanted to open an embassy as soon as the U.S. troops invaded Iraq, but the Bush administration told them no embassy. So an embassy wasn't opened until more than a year after the invasion.
One of the things I wanted to talk about, and it's certainly come up in the recent issues involving the Ukraine and the diplomatic corps there, is the idea that Foreign Service officers' mission to carry out administration policy, no matter whether they agree with it or not, and the debates that these Foreign Service officers have on, do I stay, try to influence the policy to a better place in their belief, and while still carrying out the administration's policy, or do I quit because I can't. Can you talk a little bit about that for these four officers?
Yes, all four of the main characters in my book did soul searching over policies of the administration at various points. That doesn't always happen. A lot of Foreign Service officers go through their whole career without any real agonizing. They go into the Foreign Service realizing that they're there to carry out what the president wants to do. But sometimes Foreign Service officers do anguish over a policy because they think that it's really not in the interest of the U.S. And that happened with these four, several of them, Ryan Crocker, Chris Stevens, and Robert Ford, really disagreed strongly with the invasion of Iraq and had difficulties at first with the idea of helping out in Iraq. But Crocker and Ford, despite their reservations, worked there for a long time and simply overcame them. Robert Ford was ambassador to Syria, but after 2 years in that post, he'd been arguing inside the government that the U.S. should be more active in helping the the moderate rebels in Syria, and he wasn't getting anywhere because President Obama just didn't agree with that view, and so he ultimately decided he couldn't represent the policy anymore, and in 2014 he quit.
There's a wonderful account of once that policy was established, he totally disagrees with it. He has to go on Capitol Hill and defend it against people like Senator John McCain, who were absolutely ripping him in public testimony, and yet he has to sit there and defend the policy or keep his mouth shut.
Right. Even though he was in agreement with McCain on a lot, on some of the points about the Syria war, I don't think he totally agreed with McCain, but McCain was tormenting him in public, even though Ford privately agreed with them. It's always an uncomfortable position for these career diplomats to go and be grilled by members of Congress.
My guest today is Paul Richter. He's a veteran foreign policy and national security correspondent, formerly with the Los Angeles Times. His new book is titled The Ambassadors, America's Diplomats on the Front Lines, published by Simon & Schuster. He chronicles the work of Ryan Crocker, Robert Ford, Ann Patterson, and the late Christopher Stevens, their work in the Middle East for veteran foreign service officers serving as ambassadors in this unstable region of the world. And it tells the history really from about the beginning of the century up to about 2016, 2017. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. As you chronicle in the book, all of these ambassadors took great risks, some tragic risk, to serve their country. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, Robert Ford was taken hostage by Shia militia in Iraq, and there have been close calls for all of these ambassadors.
Right. Robert Ford's first job in Iraq was to go out and act as a sort of one-man occupation government in this province in central Iraq. And when he got there, there was no real government. There was a battalion of Marines trying to run things. He didn't even have bodyguards in the beginning of his tour there, and so he would go out to meet with local leaders, local religious leaders and tribal leaders, and sometimes it got really risky. He was there one week. He went out to sit with a local religious leader. He had a translator, and he had a military aide with him, and they'd been sitting there drinking tea in the Arab style for a while. And suddenly this militia breaks into the house that they're in and grabs his translator and starts beating him up. And it looks like this militia might hold them indefinitely. Ford wasn't sure whether they'd be injured, whether they'd be held indefinitely, and it was pretty frightening. But he was able to talk his way out of that tough spot by when he realized that he had a meeting set up for later that day with the leader of the militia that was holding him. So he pointed that out to the head guy among these fighters, and finally, after a number of hours, they let him free. But it wasn't long before Ford got on bad terms with another militia, the militia of leader you might have heard of, Muqtada al-Sadr. And soon Ford was realizing that he was on the assassination list for Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army. So it was basically one threat after another.
Before we leave, I want to ask you one question. As you well know, Julia Yaffe's GQ article came out, and one of the takeaways, it talks about one Foreign Service officer who apparently was fired from the UK for mentioning President Obama in a speech here in the last year or two. But there was a more telling point. As we talk about the vacancies within the State Department and the vacancy within the Foreign Service officers, especially these minister ranks or ambassador ranks, one thing I learned from this article was that when an ambassador officer finishes a tour of service, they have to be reassigned to another post within, I think it's 3 months, or they're forced to retire. When we talk about all of these posts that are sitting vacant, that in itself is creating this brain drain at the State Department, isn't it?
Yes, there's a number of factors that are contributing to the departure of a lot of skilled people. and that's been going on. And another issue is that young people who've been thinking about a career in the Foreign Service, a lot of them are really highly motivated and talented, have been wondering whether there are going to be jobs for them, whether there'll be good, interesting jobs for them. The number of people who have been applying to take the Foreign Service exam, which you have to do to get into the Foreign Service, that number has dropped from a high of 20,000 in 2010. It's now currently about 8,000. So all these are signs that the Foreign Service is not going to be what it was. Some people are predicting it may take a generation to repair it if our next president decides that he or she wants to build it back up again.
If the next president decides to build it back up again, can he rely on some of these same talents that are being forced out, or are they moving on to different careers and are pretty much lost to the Foreign Service?
No, there'll be a permanent loss of talent because, you know, people move on. They'll have to find different careers. So it will be a long process of recruiting and then training people. And again, there'll be a loss of diplomatic capability in a lot of parts of the world.
We saw a number of ambassadors, Paul Taylor, several ambassador rank officials from the Foreign Service testifying in the impeachment inquiry. Many people, it was the first time they saw these people close up in an extended period other than maybe only occasional soundbite. What do you think people took away from seeing these officers in action, albeit in a completely different setting than we normally see them operate in?
You're really right that to the public doesn't really know much about the career diplomatic service at all. And I think, as with most things in America today, there was a real division of opinion on the performance of these career diplomats. I think a lot of people were impressed by them, thought they were really capable and an impressive group. But other people probably shared President Trump's view that these people were trying to undermine his policy that he wanted to put in place as the president. So, you know, there's a big debate over the image of the Foreign Service and its value that's going on right now. Foreign Service is worried about this because they're worried that with the appearance of these diplomats, President Trump may be kind of confirmed in his suspicion that the Foreign Service is working against them. And if he's elected to another term, he may decide to further scale back their influence.
And that's something the State Department traditionally has shied away from, being viewed as political. They're about expertise in a particular area.
That's right. They were formed in 1924 by the Congress because it was decided that the country really needed to have this group of experts and implementers who could help put in place foreign policy.
Well, the name of the book is The Ambassadors. Paul Richter, thanks very much for joining us.
Glad to be with you.
Paul Richter is a veteran foreign policy and national security correspondent, formerly with the Los Angeles Times for many years, and is the author of The Ambassadors, America's Diplomats on the Front Lines. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.